Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He is Chris Buccinani. I am Jim Galante, all ready for an hour of Penn State football talk. Chris, I get the pleasure of having you on for a second time this week. Isn't that fantastic?
I don't know that I would describe it as a pleasure, but your words, not mine. Always happy to be here. I appreciate it, Jim. I'm glad to be with you.
I'm calling it a pleasure, Chris. I always enjoy talking to you.
No accounting for taste.
I enjoy your take. I've gotten feedback from listeners. I know our listeners enjoy your take also. I am just pleased that we're able to get you on for a second time this week. In fact, this is back-to-back shows, so it's even better. We talked about a lot of different topics earlier in the week, including some basketball. We're not going to do that today. Let's move on. I did want to talk to you about the Penn State players who are at the Combine. And Chris, it just seems like every single year, these Penn State players go to the Combine and just put up some crazy numbers.
Yeah, so we talked on the last show I did with you, Jim, about my lack of buy-in on the importance of these videos that get tweeted out in the offseason about how much weight guys are lifting and the information about the strength and conditioning program. And my question, does it really make a difference when it matters? You need that, though. You need that to get to the point where you even have a chance to answer that question. And Penn State is blessed, I think, with probably one of the best and definitely most consistent strength and conditioning programs in the country under James Franklin. And when he needs to be given a lot of credit for that, not just for what it does for our players when they're on the field, but what it does to help maintain the talent pipeline. Because I think the performance of Penn State players at the Combine now over a stretch of several years is a critical differentiator that helps James and his staff on the recruiting trail. Because if you're somebody who fashions yourself a genuine NFL prospect, you're dialed into this stuff. You're paying attention to which programs are sending the most talent to the league and who's prepping their guys to put their best foot forward in the pre-draft process. And Penn State's got now like practically a decade-long track record of putting up some of the most eye-popping numbers from its alumni when they go to the NFL Combine. So I think when you think about what is going to allow James Franklin or any of his assistants to go into a living room and separate Penn State from some of the other contending programs, I'd like to be able to point to now, guys, numbers we saw from like Chop Robinson and Theo Johnson on Combine Day this year and say, these are just the latest in a long line of Penn State guys going to the Combine and killing it. So if you come be a Nittany Lion, we are going to prep you to make a great case for yourself in the pre-draft process, which oftentimes you kill the Combine, you could make yourself millions and millions of more dollars to start your career in the pros.
It obviously makes a difference. And one of the positions, and you mentioned Theo Johnson, is tight end at Penn State. They just churn them out. It's a tight end factory now. And when you, as you said, when you talk to a recruit, you could point to player after player after player hitting the NFL, players being highlighted in the offense at tight end, and then going to the Combine and putting up these great numbers. It's like, at Ohio State, it's about the wide receivers have that kind of room. It's becoming that way at tight end for Penn State. And Theo Johnson just had a crazy Combine.
Yeah, we talk about the Combine is underwear Olympics, right? And how there's not always a one-to-one comparison between what you do in these Olympic trials and what you do on the field. Bill Parcells had a great quote about it. If I was starting the U.S. Olympic team, I'd give more credence to the Combine than if I was trying to build a 53-man NFL roster. And I think there's some validity to that. I think I mentioned on the last show this list I saw of like the guys who ran the fastest 40 times at the Combine, and most of them did not do very much or anything in the NFL. I'm sure there are some Steelers fans out there who remember the name Dry Archer, who He ran a 4.240, and that was the last time you ever heard his name, unless you were a Pittsburgh fan who was sour about the Steelers wasting a draft pick on him. But Theo's got plenty of tape to show that the guy can play the game and play it very well. And so I think he probably he boosted his draft stock maybe by at least a round with the numbers he put up at the combine.
I think he did also. And Chris, you're right. You can't say it's all about the combine, or if you wanted to just go get some Olympian sprinter, put him in the combine and make him a first round draft pick. We know that doesn't work. And just to be fair about things, and I know you're an Eagles fan, I'm an Eagles fan, just to be fair to our Pittsburgh Steelers fans, I'll see your example from Pittsburgh, and I'll raise you, Mike.
Oh, please,
Mamula.
Don't say Mike Mamula. Jeez. And all right. Well, if you don't know who Mike Mamula is, look him up. But anyway, he is to this day probably the prototypical combine warrior. So yeah, you've got to have both. You've got to have both sides of the ledger filled out. You got to be able to have an impressive resume of film, and you want to be able to put up great combine numbers. And truly, I just can't overemphasize how great I think it is for Penn State that you have a guy like Chop or Theo who does something great at the combine. That's all over social media for the next 48 hours. And that's a tremendous billboard for Penn State football for all the prospective recruits out there in the next few classes.
And I'll point out another name. And we have, as a tradition on this show, we call the players our man crushes, Chris. Okay.
Yes. I know who you're going to talk about. And I'm glad I was short-sighted in not throwing him in the group who really just did a tremendous job. Go ahead.
Daquan Hardy.
Yeah.
My guy. And there's an example where he had a phenomenal season. If you paid attention, Chris, he had a phenomenal season. But because of his height, you're going to get, I believe, some NFL scouts, this guy's a little bit smaller, would like him to be bigger, whatever. Well, one of the ways that Daquan Hardy can make up for that is showing his athleticism. Well, how about running a 4.38 40 and a 42.5-inch vertical leap, Chris? 42.5 inches. That was the best at the cornerback position. I'm saying the guy's pretty athletic.
Yeah, the spider graph on Daquan Hardy is definitely going to catch the attention of some NFL personnel guys. To go back to the Eagles for a minute, I have drawn the comparison. If you look at Avante Maddox, who's a Pitt guy, by the way, who's been a very capable slot corner for Philly for the last several years when he's been healthy, his physical build is almost a one-to-one comparison for Daquan Hardy. I think it's clear that Hardy is a guy who can be a designated nickel corner at the next level. And the other advantages he has is we've seen he's got great ability as a returner. And we also know, you just watch his tape, the guy's not afraid to hit a ton, which means right out of the gate, you're going to be able to let him play on a few special teams units. I still think, to your point, because of his size, despite the great combine numbers that he put up, he's still a day three guy in all likelihood. I don't think he cracked day two. I wouldn't be shocked if you see him go in the third round, but he's going to find a niche in the NFL, and he's going to play for a long time. I really think whoever drafts Daquan Hardy is going to get tremendous value.
I'm with you on that one. I already felt that way before we saw these numbers. Now we have a situation just the opposite,
Which is, again, I know where you're going. I think, to me, this is maybe the headline of the whole combine. For Penn State fans specifically.
Kalen King, it's where we're headed. He ran just a 4.61 40. And what do those numbers mean? There were 31 cornerbacks who ran it. He was 30th out of 31. And Chris, you put that on top of not a great last season, a great 23 year for Kalen King. This was a guy who we thought was going to be a first-round draft pick. I'm making a prediction here, Chris. He's not going to be a first-round draft pick.
Well, the situation around Johnny Dixon is very muddled right now because of his injury situation. He sustained an injury during Senior Bowl week which was serious enough to keep him not only out of the combine, but he's not going to be able to go at Penn State's pro day either. So there's something going on there, which is a real shame because he's a great kid. And I think he's got an NFL future for sure. Just based on what I know in terms of where Dixon was slotted as a prospect and what I think of him as a player, I think had he not had the injury situation, which we just have no idea how that's going to affect his draft stock, I think it's completely possible that all things being equal, with the numbers Kalen King has put up, he might have been the third Penn State defensive back selected in the draft. And that's a precipitous fall from somebody who, as you said, Jim, entered last season considered a likely first-round pick. And I think in some ways, his performance was a victim of those expectations. It's not like he had a terrible year. He had a respectable year. He fell short of what people expected him to be in the preseason. And on the biggest stage, going up against the biggest name in college football probably last season, he got absolutely cooked by Marvin Harrison Jr. in a game that effectively ended Penn State's season. So when the spotlight was brightest, he had his absolute worst moment. He had a rough season, apparently had a very, very up and down difficult Senior Bowl, and the combine was, just to put it bluntly, a disaster for him.
It's been a rough year for him, but I want to finish on a positive note, and that's talking Chop Robinson. He ran a 4.49. This is a defensive end, and I've seen some articles, Chris, that he's been a bit up and down, that he didn't show enough, he's raw. I swear I watched every play of Penn State season. I watch him specifically a lot. I think he's going to be a tremendous NFL player, Chris.
I do too. I think he's got, as they say, all the tools, right? The potential is there. And when you look at the raw material an NFL team is going to get to work with, where he can now say, my sole focus is football, that's my job, and I am part of an organization that is designed to maximize my ability to do that, I think that's going to make the difference for him. I think he's for sure a legit first round talent. You know, the comparison I would make is, there was some question around Odafe Oweh when he came out, like, is he legitimately a first round player? And the Ravens drafted him on potential. I think Chop is much further along than Odafe was.
And that was a thing. If you watched Oweh play after play after play, you saw how special he was, even if the number of sacks didn't match up. Watching Chop Robinson, every down of his, in the NFL, it's so important to get after the quarterback. He will get after the quarterback. All right, that's it for quarter number one. Lots more to go. Stick with us. Having multiple sportsbook accounts is the simplest way to get the best available odds, and there's never been a better time to sign up. When you visit our page, signupexpert.com/KSN, you'll be connected to all the sportsbooks in your region. All of these sportsbooks have valuable sign-up offers for new users, and through our link, you'll automatically receive the top offer at each one. If you want to take advantage of these benefits, sign up for your next sportsbook at signupexpert.com/KSN or see the preferred sportsbook button on our app.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number two. He's Chris. I'm Jim. We're talking Penn State football. Chris, actually, I want to go a little bit national. I want to talk about college football in general. The topic we've talked about quite a bit is the playoffs and how they work. And for those who don't know, kind of the background is they had to make special arrangements to change the playoffs for the next 2 years, okay, where they made the adjustment to a 12-team playoff. They originally did what was called the 6-6 model, six conference champions. Well, when the Pac-12 went away, they changed it to five conference champions, which means the Big Four, Southeast Conference, Big Ten, ACC, and Big 12, and then the best of the rest, the group of five conference winner, would go in now as that fifth one, and then seven at-large teams. I've grown to really like this this model with the 12 teams. I think it would be a fantastic thing. But then they had to start talking about what are they going to do after those 2 years? Well, they can't leave well enough alone. We can't even see one 12-team playoff. They're already talking, let's expand it and make it a 14-team playoff. First of all, forgetting the automatic bids, forget that for a second. We will get to it, Chris. What do you think of jumping the number of playoff teams from 12 to 14?
I don't like it. I mean, as you know, Jim, I'm not in love with 12. 14 seems such a bizarre and arbitrary number for me. And beyond that, I think you nailed it just there. Can we get a little bit of a sample size to figure out how this works? Do we like it? Where are the flaws? We're already tinkering with a system we're not even 1 year in on, trying to improve something we haven't even seen with the shrink wrap off. I just think it's nuts. I also think, again, like to just maybe preempt the whole conversation, I think a lot of this is just sound and fury signifying nothing, because I just don't think whatever we're discussing in March of 2024 is going to have long-term applicability to the direction that the sport is heading. But yeah, I don't like it at all.
Well, I think going to 14 teams is just an indicator after a couple more years that it'll go to 16, because
100%. Yeah.
You know,
well, I mean, why wouldn't you just go to 16 now? It's so obvious that you won't stick at 14. You think you have to do this in increments of two for some bizarre reason? Look, if you want to expand the playoff, just get it to where you want it to go and stay with it.
Well, they're obviously not limited to expanding by two additional teams because they're jumping from 4 to 12, Chris. All right?
Okay, fine. Fair.
And you know what? I always said I thought 8 was the number. Back when there were 5 power conferences,
yeah,
earn your way in, win your conference championship, make that conference championship game really mean something, and then you have 3 at-large bids. So if you're a really, really good team, and you know you could be the second best team, but the second best team in the Southeast Conference, and you don't get in, you know, give them a way to get in with the at-large bid. Now, when I first saw the 12-team model put out there, I was but the more I thought about it, I thought it helps the game quite a bit, because I think there, and not just this season, but I think it's often the case where you start to get team number 5 through team number 12, or let's set aside that you have a group of 5 conference champion in who might be the 18th or 20th best team. So now you're really talking about 11 teams. Okay, that from 5 to 11, or specifically 8 to 11, boy, it's hard to differentiate. I think, though, if you put in a total of 12 teams, including your group of 5 team, I'm pretty confident I've got the best teams in that playoff. Maybe there's one or two teams who snuck in who don't really belong, but the reverse is true. I've got maybe the 8-9 best teams are in the tournament, and that's what I really want.
You have achieved the good of what I think every college football fan has always hoped for, which is that a team that deserves to be in the national title hunt is not excluded, right? So there's, you can at least say that. There, you can go back through college football history, and you can see, find many, many very, very good teams that through no fault of their own were completely shut out of the national title conversation. And of course, Penn State has the 1994 team, the 2005 team, the 2016 team. All of those teams probably merited a chance to at least be in the mix and in the conversation, and the setup of the sport just didn't allow for it. So that's good. And maybe you can say that benefit outweighs letting a few pretenders to the throne get in there, because they'll end up losing anyway. But to me, I'm like you, I like 8. If we're going to settle on 12, to then expand anywhere beyond that fundamentally transforms the nature of the postseason away from what it has always been every iteration prior to this one in college football, to where now it's looking more like the NHL or the NFL. It's like, well, you know, just everybody gets in and maybe you get hot and go on a run, but it's really more about creating additional interest for deeper into the season for more fan bases. And, you know, again, That's a model that's worked very well in professional sports. A unique value prop of college football has always been that it was different from all of those, and we're getting away from them. So that's why I don't like it. And I mean, look, have you ever looked at the 13th ranked team in the country and thought, man, those guys, if only somebody would just give them a chance, they could really surprise people.
Well, and again, the way it's going to work with conference champions. Now, I have zero problem with conference championships getting in. What we're saying to this, to every team then in the country, or at least from the power conferences, you can make the playoffs. Just win your conference championship, with all apologies to Florida State, but win your conference championship and you've made the playoffs. You know, it's, I'm not crazy that the NCAA basketball tournament has 64 teams, but at least they say, go win your tournament and you can qualify. With doing this, at least with the top conferences, the ones that can realistically say their teams are good enough to win a national championship, you could get in there. Now, as you grow teams, like you mentioned, the NHL, NBA, and even the NFL, you know, that 9-7 team in the NFL who makes the playoff, I cringe at that. With 12 teams, they're not at that point. You know, the number 12 team, or more likely the 11th ranked team, is the last one. Either the 10th or 11th team is the last team getting in. That's probably a 10-2 team, and maybe had the terrible situation where they lost two games on the road, played great games. I could still argue that they belong as part of the playoff. I became convinced that the 12 teams is the right way to go. And the other part to it that I really liked is this thought that you're cheapening the regular season. No, I think with 12 teams, you are making the season even more important because more teams are playing important games. You know, it's not just, okay, Ohio State plays Michigan last weekend of the season to decide who's in the playoffs. Penn State, perfect example this past year. They lost two games, but every other game was still important. I know they were expected to beat Michigan State, but you know what? That last game, they better win or they're not going to make the playoffs, Chris. That added something to all of these games. Somehow I think if you start hitting 14-16, now I think you're starting to cheapen the process.
Yeah, 100%. Let's just stick with it and use Penn State as an example, not to pick on them. But if we had this 14-team playoff model, the 2018 Penn State team would have made the college football postseason. If people can remember that team, they had three regular season losses against their three best opponents, by the way. They were a few spectacular plays by KJ Hamler and Trace McSorley and Amani Oruwariye from losing their home opener to start the season to App State. And then they lost to Kentucky in football. Now, any team that's bad enough to lose to the best team Kentucky's ever had does not belong in the college football playoffs. And again, I feel bad picking on that team, but they had absolutely no business being in a postseason tournament. They didn't earn the right to be in that conversation. But because of how far you dilute the talent pool till you get to 14 teams, they would have been in the mix. And would they have lost their first game? Yeah. Probably. But the point is, we're now so far from the nature of what the sport has been to even give them the chance that you are, as you said, really moving closer to the college basketball model, which is you have your regular season, which earns you the right to get your seed. But the tournament doesn't necessarily look to crown the best team from the regular season. And that's been great. That's been great for college basketball, and it's created great entertainment product. That's not what college football is or has been. And the nature of the sport is, in my mind, just that it won't work the same way.
I'm with you. And like I said, to start the segment, let's try this 12-team thing. Like I said, I feel like it's the right way to go. Now, this...
Yeah, we talked about a couple shows ago, we talked about the advantages potentially of earning the 5 seed. Don't you want to see that in practice a few times? I mean, I can say I think there's a market inefficiency to where you get the 5 seed and you have a glide path to the semifinals. But I would like to see that play out over 3 or 4 years at least to see whether or not that's correct. To change the system so dramatically and then before you even put it in the field once to start tinkering around with it, to me, is ludicrous.
And for those who don't realize what Chris is talking about, we chatted about this a few shows ago. So where the hell were you? You should have been listening to the show. There's no excuse for not understanding it.
100%.
The way it works out is the number 5 seed, that first round, you'll play a number 12 seed that might be like a Tulane or somebody from the group of five. You then get to play probably team seeded number 4, which would be the lowest ranked conference champion, which could be a Big 12 or ACC team that might only be like ranked 10th or 12th in the country, and that's your second round, and you kind of cruise into the semifinals not really even being tested. But you know what? I'm okay with that, Chris, conceptually. I'd like to see it in practice, like you point out, but conceptually, being seeded 5th, you might be the second-ranked team in the country, so I don't mind you getting a pretty easy ride to the semifinals, right? You earned it.
No, yeah, and I think it has the potential to make the season interesting. You talk about adding value to the regular season. I would just like to see it in practice a few times before we decide we don't like it and we're going to change it again.
Chris, I'm already saying that we are going to love this 12-team playoff. We're going to love it. All right, we've got more to talk about with these potential changes in the playoff setup. Stay tuned for that. Having multiple sportsbook accounts is the simplest way to get the best available odds, and there's never been a better time to sign up. When you visit our page, signupexpert.com/KSN, you'll be connected to all the sportsbooks in your region. All of these sportsbooks have valuable sign-up offers for new users, and through our link, you'll automatically receive the top offer at each one. If you want to take advantage of these benefits, sign up for your next sportsbook at signupexpert.com/KSN or see the preferred sportsbook button on our app.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It is quarter number 3. He's Chris. I'm Jim. Chris, we finished up quarter number 2 talking about the prospects of the playoffs expanding again, this time to 14 teams, which we both agree is awkward. I want to get into the other part of this proposal, which is the auto bids. But before we get to that, you talked about, why 14? And we both talked about you don't need those 2 more teams to get up to 14. But if you really have to go that far, 14 is such an awkward number. Does it work out? You give 2 teams a bye on that first week. Why don't you just go to 16 teams where the numbers work? It's the right number to work it through. Everybody plays that first week. And those top seeds, that number 1 and 2 seed, they get a home playoff game. If we think about this in terms of the fans and the fan experience, Chris, I am dying for a home playoff game at Beaver Stadium. I'd give anything for that. Wouldn't those top seeds feel the same way? So could you imagine that first weekend where you literally have 8 college football playoff games with the, 16 or near 16 top teams in the country? Forget fair, forget all of that, forget logical. I'm just talking about the fan experience. If you're a college football fan, is that not the greatest weekend of football ever?
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't like 12, really. But if you're going to go in that direction, I think 14 makes no sense at all. If you're going to expand beyond 12, I'm with you. Clearly, you're going to go to 16. Clearly, you're going to do that. It's so obvious. Just do it. Because it's better. It's 16 is actually better than 14. So, yeah, just pull the trigger and do it if you're going to do that. And of course, that requires the Big Ten and the SEC to continue to allow the ACC and the Big 12 to be part of the party. And Again, I think that future is highly in doubt, even beyond whether or not the conferences or the television networks want to have it. At some point or another in the near future, these schools are going to have to start paying their rosters, their entire rosters, salaries. And I'm not really sure a lot of the ACC and Big 12 institutions are either going to want to or be able to be a part of this. So if you're worried, like me, that these future playoff brackets are going to get massively diluted, don't be worried too much, because I don't think any of these conversations hold a lot of weight for the long-term future.
Well, we're going to get to that, but the headline, and you're alluding to it, is the Southeast Conference in the Big Ten ruling the roost here. And part of this 14-team playoff proposal, Chris, is automatic bids. And
right,
where we talked about the 12 team, it's the 5 and 7, 5 automatic, 7 at large. They're talking about doing a 3-3-2-2-1 automatic bid, which is 3 for the Southeast Conference and Big Ten, 2 for the ACC and Big 12, and 1 for the Group of 5, so that 11 of the 14 teams are automatic bids. Why in the world do the Southeast Conference and the Big Ten warrant that?
It's nuts.
Yeah, automatic bid. Why not earn your way in? Okay, I get it. If you
which you're going to anyway, they're negotiating against themselves. This is it's a crazy offer. This is like when the Bears traded like a ton of assets to move up one spot with San Francisco so they could draft Mitchell Trubisky, right? I mean, it's just you're bidding against yourself. It's crazy. If I'm the Big 12, my advice: sprint, don't run, to sign this deal. Like, I just looking forward to the 2024 season coming up here, there is no realistic scenario where the Big 12 places 2 playoff teams. If the Big Ten and SEC, which are going to get the top 2 seeds 99 times out of 100 anyway, say, in order for you to guarantee us this thing we are almost always going to get under the current system, we will amend that system to give you a second spot you are almost never going to get, why wouldn't you take it? Of course, yes, by all means.
Right. On the surface, I'm thinking if you do it by earning your way in, the Southeast Conference and the Big Ten will have like 4 teams good enough to get in.
Right.
And you're right, the ACC and the Big 12 may only have 1 team. Now, my only rationale for this, and tell me what you think of this, Chris, is you've now added Oregon, Washington, USC to the Big Ten. You've added Oklahoma, Texas to the Southeast Conference. All of a sudden, you know, for the last decade and a half, you've essentially had Alabama and Georgia skating by in the same conference and never playing each other in the regular season. Okay.
Yeah, which is going to change now.
You can't escape more good teams. Now, that creates better games in conference, but could it be those 2 big conferences are scared that, hey, you know what? My 3rd or 4th best team has 3 losses, where the ACC and, you know, Big 12, their 3rd best team, 2nd or 3rd best team only has 2 losses. Do I have to trust the college football committee to differentiate the strength of schedule? Because the fact is, for the last decade, other than Florida State, which I think they were setting a precedent, very simple. Undefeated gets you in before 1 loss. 1 loss gets you in before 2 losses. That's how it's worked for a decade, Chris. Might those 2 big conferences be scared that the college football committee is going to say, well, that was a 2-loss team versus your 3-loss team?
I highly doubt it, because they functionally control the playoff committee. I mean, this is like, it's very difficult to be victimized by the law when you're the ones writing the and enforcing the laws. And for all intents and purposes, the Big Ten and the SEC via Fox and ABC ESPN, that's they're Judge Judy and executioner, Jim. Like, this is like, I, to me, this whole proposal is so counterintuitive and moronic that I cannot accept it as a real thing. I think they're just filibustering. They're just filling time here with this. I just cannot accept that there is any real possibility that this is going to become law of the land in college football at any point.
Well, the problem is, Chris, as we saw, if they wait too long, or if they implement this and then say, oh, you know, we're 6 months away from that, you know, 27 season, and we'll change our minds and redo it, they've shown they're incapable of working quickly or efficiently. I think they're going to be stuck with this. So I actually do think we're going to end up with some they are seriously talking about these models. And I'm just with you. It makes no sense. But that's what they're pushing. And I also agree with you. If you're the Big 12 or the ACC, you jump on the opportunity for two automatic bids. But I have another question for you. It's obvious this is the Big Ten and Southeast Conference's influence. But the other issue out there, what about Notre Dame? When you're starting to do 11 automatic bids, Notre Dame's not part of a conference. They cannot get an automatic bid. Could Notre Dame afford to stay independent?
That's a complicated question, because a lot of it comes down to what NBC is willing to pay Notre Dame to be on television. And if NBC as a network is committed to facilitating Notre Dame's football independence, they'll be able to keep doing it even beyond, you know, changes to the playoff. Because again, as we were just talking about, like, this is a brand driven enterprise, right? So the Notre Dame football brand is going to keep them in the conversation. Now, if you make it all automatic bids, like, yeah, that is basically, to me, indicative that there have already been talks progressing behind the scenes for Notre Dame to finally at least kind of like fake join up one of the two major conferences. I'll bet you any money, Jim, they'll still find some way to have like, they'll call it a scheduling agreement with, let's just say, the Big Ten. And they'll play like 8, 9, 10 Big Ten opponents a year, but they won't formally be a part of the Big Ten. They'll just play all Big Ten teams and be eligible for the Big Ten championship game, but they won't be a member of the Big Ten conference, right? They'll milk that for like another 2 or 3 decades. But I don't know if that's really going to happen or not. I have thought for a long time the natural home for Notre Dame football is the Big Ten. I think it's still trending in that direction. Every time it seems that it's close, we pull back from the brink. But I still think we're going to see it sooner rather than
later. I think it has to get there, Chris. But it leads to this point. You mentioned Notre Dame's NBC contract. NBC also has a contract with the Big Ten now.
Correct.
Okay. So, you know, you feel like they could work something out there. But it also leads to, you mentioned, you know, the two conferences and, of course, the conference commissioners. They have more say than whoever's in charge of the NCAA. But is this still ultimately a television conversation? It's Fox, it's ESPN, and it's whatever they want, whatever they say. Hey, we'll pay you more. You know, if they say we'll pay you more money for a 17-team playoff, I suspect we have a 17-team playoff.
So there's a great Tom Hanks movie, Jim, which flew a little under the radar. I don't know if you've ever seen it, but I'll recommend it to you and the listeners. It's called Charlie Wilson's War. Tom Hanks plays a congressman. It's a great story. Very interesting. It's like the backstory of how America funded the proxy war against the Soviets in Afghanistan back in the 80s. And there's a scene where Tom Hanks, again, a congressman, says, people have to understand I'm not elected by voters. I'm elected by contributors. Well, people need to understand that college football is not run by college and university presidents. It's run by television networks now. So just like donors own politicians, television networks own college football programs. So yes, yes, yes. I just used the term proxy war. Right now, we got the Big Ten and SEC are being used in a proxy war between Fox and ESPN. And ultimately, as we talked about a few weeks ago, and if you missed it, why weren't you listening? the two networks are going to join up together and realize they can make more money by cooperating. And it's going to be more like the situation we have with the NFL, where the AFC and NFC are carried by different networks, but they don't compete against each other's brands. That's the direction we're headed in college football. And it's the SEC and the Big Ten. And we in Penn State country are lucky enough to be on the inside and not on the out looking in.
That is exactly the point. It is television and television money, more specifically, that runs everything, Chris. All right, that's it for quarter number three. We got one more segment to go. Stick with us. Having multiple sportsbook accounts is the simplest way to get the best available odds, and there's never been a better time to sign up. When you visit our page, signupexpert.com/KSN, you'll be connected to all the sportsbooks in your region. All of these sportsbooks have valuable sign-up offers for new users, and through our link, you'll automatically receive the top offer at each one. If you want to take advantage of these benefits, sign up for your next sportsbook at signupexpert.com/KSN or see the preferred sportsbook button on our app.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter four. He's Chris. I'm Jim. Chris, I just wanted to follow up on one last item that we were talking about with television running things. It's ESPN, it's Fox, and I've been saying this, and it sounded like this is where you were headed. With the way things are going now, the Southeast Conference is all about the Southeast Conference, the Big Ten about the Big Ten. If you had any question about that at all, that question should have been answered when essentially the Big Ten crushed the Pac-12. When they took in USC, UCLA, they put an end to the Pac-12, okay? There is nobody looking out for the interest of all of college football. There still is not anyone looking out for everybody's interest. The powers that be in the Southeast Conference and the Big Ten, they are going to allow ESPN and Fox tell them what is best by saying, we'll write a bigger check if you do this. Fox said, we'll write you a bigger check if you bring in USC and Oregon and Washington. My question is, Chris, would they write a bigger check if you separated, you know, the whether it's 40, 50, 60-some teams and created essentially that NFL model and ESPN is carrying the AFC, the, you know, Fox is covering the NFC? I would think if those networks got together, they would create a model with more great games and more interest, and that would make more money. Is that a true statement?
Based on my limited knowledge and observation of the situation, no. You look at what the size of the playoff contract that ESPN just signed versus what people anticipated might have been on the table money-wise, and there's a big disparity, and it was smaller, considerably smaller than people thought it might be. And I think it's because the TV contract you saw that the Big Ten was able to put together, that may end up representing the high watermark. Because as somebody who has done plenty of work in TV, it is not the easiest way to make a living, ad-driven media, especially on television and on cable television. And so I think it's clear that, you know, from a fan's perspective, especially people who care about the tradition and history of college football, we can probably name 60 programs that we think would belong in a top tier. From the perspective of being able to go out and sell eyeballs and make the money make sense from a business standpoint, that is not going to be feasible and it will not fly for the major networks. I think the number is considerably smaller than that, perhaps by 24 teams.
And, well, we're going to see then the Southeast Conference and the Big Ten duke it out the way they have been. All right, Chris, I want to hit one more item before we end the show, and that's the rule changes that appear to be coming to the NCAA. There are three of them. They're talking about doing the communication through the helmet, and they should have done this before the Michigan cheating thing. It's easy to do. Why not do that? They also are talking about using the tablets, the iPads, or whatever on the sideline. Again, why not? And having a 2-minute warning and a timeout there.
Yeah.
Anything, what strikes you among those rule changes? Anything?
I think the first two are barely headlines to me, because as you said, we've seen this technology in use in the NFL for years and years and years. If we can do it at college, we may as well do it. So yeah, great. You saw during the Michigan scandal, all these head coaches were saying it's nuts that we don't have this. And when you have that much consensus in the profession, I think it is probably indicative that it's an idea whose time has long since come. So yeah, great. The 2-minute warning, my first thought was, man, I cannot wait to watch James Franklin mismanage timeouts around a 2-minute warning. Beyond that, I don't think it's a huge deal one way or another, other than to say I am somebody who always enjoyed the idiosyncratic differences between college and professional football. I viewed those as features, not bugs. And the more we just kind of create continuity between the two, and the more it becomes a homogenous product, to me, that takes away a little something that I enjoy personally. But I think for the average fan, they'll barely notice the difference.
Well, my problem is probably a little more philosophical than the fact that there's that extra timeout. I think in a vacuum, having the 2-minute warning, I don't look at that as the decision maker saying, oh, won't it make the game more interesting?
Well, there's one thing we needed in college football games this last season, Jim, is more commercial breaks, because these poor folks, they could barely keep their lights turned on. They just couldn't get enough commercials into the broadcast.
Exactly. So this is no matter how much, and I see the interviews with NCAA representatives and all, and they'll tell you this will create more excitement in the end of game situations by giving that team who is behind one more timeout to work with. Isn't that great? No, no, no. That is not why you are doing this. No, you want another commercial break. It's just like, and it's to me more striking, because just a year ago, they changed the rules with fewer stoppages in the game, okay, because they wanted to speed up the game. What they did was take away 4 or 5 plays, football plays per game, Chris.
Yeah.
They gave me less football. They didn't give me fewer commercials. What they said they wanted to do was shrink the time. Now, so what do they do just 1 year later? Oh, we'll have another stoppage in play called the 2-minute warning, not giving me back my 4 or 5 plays that I'm missing. They are giving me more commercials. So please, please.
And again, the more and more I'm thinking about it, I am just not a fan of homogenizing the pro and college games. The next thing they're going to do, Jim, and this has nothing to do with commercial breaks, but I've already seen some talk about this online. They're going to come for the distance between the hash marks and try to standardize them between college and the NFL. And again, if all you want is a lower quality quasi-professional team, like the UFL is going to play this spring. You can go watch like crappier professional football. It already exists. You don't have to come in and bastardize this sport that we have loved and has worked very well for decades upon decades and turn it into another Frankenstein's monster developmental league for the pros. So, yeah, this is little stuff. And again, I think most people will barely even notice, but it sticks in my craw.
It's just another brick in the wall. They're creating this, of course. I hadn't heard or anything about the changing the hash marks, but that's another
Has any college football fan once in their life, other than maybe when their team was down and out of timeouts, looked at a game and thought, man, you know what we really need a 2-minute warning? There were just thousands of college football fans nationwide crying out for a 2-minute warning. I don't know. Again, it's probably not worth making that much of a big deal over, but why? Why?
I'm sorry, Chris.
One more commercial break.
I'll make the big deal out of it, because I don't want, at least if you're going to do this, I would have more respect for them if they came out and said, we need to pay more bills, we need the commercials.
Fair.
Be honest about it. do not lie to me. Do not say, oh, we're doing this to create more excitement. No, you are not. You are
people
not.
Complain about commercials,
me.
By the way. Jim, I have great personal empathy for people who need to find ways to sell and run more television commercials. Okay, truly, I do. I don't want to throw shade at those people. They are just trying to pay their mortgage like the rest of us. But to your point, yes, it would be great to have some truth in advertising on that.
Right. And if you watch, and I know if you've been, you know, longtime listeners of the show, you've heard Jim complain about some of these other things. But it struck me last year that their issue was that television window, they said. You know, a noon game has to end by 3:30 because we want to start that other game, and sometimes they were running late. So we are going to do something to shorten the game so it would be over in time for the next game, Chris, okay? You know where I'm headed. Then why don't you just start the game at noon? Noon, not 12:05, not 12:08, not 12:10. Why? Because
and
I
then don't artificially pause and extend the game by adding a 2-minute warning that nobody has ever wanted to be part of the game.
Exactly. It's counterintuitive, counterproductive, but they're doing that, Chris, and they lie to us while they're doing it. Okay. That's what
going back to the comparison between college football and politicians, by the way.
Yes, that's exactly it. And, you know, you are, by the way, this is you getting a sample of salty Jim. This is Jim. And I get too worked up about these things. And to me, I just have an issue with the television stations, the media who are telling us these things, Chris, and it's not the case. And all they accomplish is give us less actual football, which is why I watch for the actual football. They're taking that away from us, Chris. And I will never be okay with it. And just lying to us about it just makes it worse. So I will end that rant. The other stuff, like you point out, the technical stuff, the tablet on the sideline, communication through the helmet. I think that those things actually enhance the product. You know, being able to have the coach communicate directly with the quarterback. Why in the world not? Why didn't they do it a decade ago?
Yeah, you know, the one thing I'm thinking about as I consider the implementation of these changes, if they're going to get the most bang for their buck using tablets down on the sideline, Jim, they're actually going to have Wi-Fi that works inside Beaver Stadium. So if the side effect of this is that I don't have to walk out of the stadium, get to my tailgate, and then receive 75,000 text messages dating back to 45 minutes before kickoff, I'm all for it. Wonderful.
Why do I just presume, Chris, it's going to be a private network put in?
Yeah, 100% it will be. Yes, there's no doubt.
Just for them only. Yeah. And enhancing our Wi-Fi just ain't going to happen. You know, that's just anyone who attends Penn State football games and has tried to send a text message, God forbid you try to send a picture in your text message, Chris.
They put that thing up on the scoreboard. If you're having a problem in your section, text Nittany Lions to the 44404. And I'm like, oh, great. They'll get it next week.
Chris, we are going to finish on that note. My friend, I thank you so much for filling in, giving us 2 hours of your wisdom this week. It's been a great pleasure. I've really enjoyed it. That is going to be it, though, for this today's show. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Having multiple sportsbook accounts is the simplest way to get the best available odds, and there's never been a better time to sign up. When you visit our page, signupexpert.com/KSN, you'll be connected to all the sportsbooks in your region. All of these sportsbooks have valuable sign-up offers for new users, and through our link, you'll automatically receive the top offer at each one. If you want to take advantage of these benefits, sign up for your next sportsbook at signupexpert.com/KSN or see the preferred sportsbook button on our app.